the No Name Never podcast with your host, Jamie Smith.
Good evening and welcome to the No Name Never podcast. I'm Jamie Smith. My guests this evening are Kevin Robinson, James Bird and Dan Black from the Burnley Express. There's lots to go through today, lots and lots to chat about. Obviously, two matches since we were last on air. So we'll kick off with the West Ham game, Burnley won out the Capital One Cup 2-0 thanks to two penalty decisions. Dan, we'll start with you. Do you think we were maybe a bit unlucky with the West Ham game?
I think that we were more than a bit unfortunate, really. I mean, particularly when you look at the first penalty decision, Shackle's clearly got across Nolan and taking the ball, and what the referee's saying, I do not know. But, you look at, on the flip side, the same thing happened to Sam Vokes at Millwall, and we've gone unrewarded there. So you just hope that at some point it's going to even itself out a bit and we're going to start getting decisions. But yeah, I mean, first half performance were brilliant. I thought we looked a bit jaded in the second half and they brought the lights of Downing on, and I thought he changed the game a little bit. But overall, I was happy with the performance, yeah.
Especially considering we had a reserve midfield out in a way, really, didn't we? David Jones suspended and Dean Marnie and Scott Arfield both injured. So the fact that we competed for so long with a second string midfield, that has to be a plus point. How do you think the four lads who came in did in midfield?
I thought they'd done very well, yeah. I thought they've given a very good account of themselves. And, you know, Edgar's coming in on Saturday as well and done exactly the same. Like you say, when you're missing three or four midfielders, it's always going to be really hard work to compete with anyone. But anyone who saw that first half will know that they were more than competitive. We dominated, didn't we? Completely dominated.
So I thought we were very good for the first half. Yeah, second half, like you just touched on there, Dan. I think the West Ham subs made a difference as well. But the penalty decision has effectively decided the game, I think. James, you must have been pleased that Your number one player, Brian Stock, was in the starting lineup. How do you think Stock did for the West Ham game?
I only saw the second half because I wasn't around for the first. But I heard very good reviews from his first half. I thought he did okay second half. Both of the midfielders seemed to be struggling with match fitness as the game went on, which I think is to be expected when they've played so little games between them.
I think with the high-pressing game that we've been playing under Sean Dyche this season, I think it was inevitable, wasn't it, that Edgar and Stock, they're not really those sort of players anyway, but when they haven't played as much football, it was inevitable they weren't going to be quite the same level. I thought we did pretty well considering we're against the Premier League side, with obviously some of their first-team players not playing, but I thought we performed pretty well. Kevin, have you seen the first penalty decision? What did you make of that, the Shackle one?
He's been very lucky, Shackle, hasn't he? Because it's happened to him twice now. It was, I can't remember which match it was, but it was when Tommy Eaton served the penalty. It was one of the best tackles you'll see all season. And he was given a penalty. Yeah, Derby, that's it. Yeah, and it's happened to him again. It was ridiculous. Obviously, the second one was a penalty, but it was all over by then anyway. But it can feel a bit hard done by this season, Shackle, I think.
Well, Shackle, arguably one of our better players this season. We'll come on to the player of the month and talk a little bit more about Jason Shackle later. But he made a good point there about the two penalties he's given away, neither of which were really penalties. And of course, he conceded an own goal last month, the only goal we conceded in the league. And he didn't really know much about that. It sort of hit him and went in. But Jason Shackle, I think, has been outstanding. Dan, we'll come back to you. There was one more change for that West Ham game before we move on to Millwall. Kevin Long played instead of Michael Duff. Do you think that was just managing Duff's fitness?
Yeah, I think you're always going to have to be careful, particularly with a small squad. Bringing the likes of the midfielders in and bringing the likes of Long in, it's important to keep them involved because at some point the likelihood is that someone's going to miss out and they're going to have to step in. I thought Long had done all right for himself again. He's, you know, Brighton, he was a bit, his performance was a bit up in the air. He let himself down a bit there. But I think, you know, he's a decent player and he's coming to a little bit. But yeah, like I say, with the size of the squad, it's important. You've just got to keep rotating, particularly in the cup.
There's been a lot of talk about the strength of the squad, James. Do you think the fact that we played fairly well against West Ham with probably five of our first 11 out, do you think that bodes well for the long winter ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could see there that the players who came in all did good jobs. I don't think you could say that they were poor. Having both Edgar and Stocking at the same time probably doesn't suit our system. You probably need either just Jones or Mornay to be out and replace just one of them with Edgar or Stock, because Edgar and Stock aren't the same sort of pressing players. Stock's a little bit more capable of it, I think, than Edgar, who obviously has been normally a defender, seems to want to tackle more and drop back more. Whereas obviously Stock likes to play the ball around, so it makes him more suited to maybe running after people rather than getting stuck in.
Yeah, I absolutely know what you mean about that pair. I think naturally they both prefer to sit a bit, don't they? Stock did actually push on quite well. He played a bit further forward than I think I've seen him play before, but neither of them are really that sort of player. They're not going to get in people's faces. Just before we move on, because it is a very, very busy show today, Kev, you've got one last point on West Ham.
Just a quick one is that I don't think any of us can be really too disappointed about going out. I think especially with the squad, if you remember that in the 2008 or 2009 season when we got to the semi-final, although we eventually got promoted, we did lose four games on the trot in the build-up to that Spurs game. All the games we were playing in that period. So especially with our small squad, I think it could be a blessing in disguise going out.
Well, this is it. I mean, I think it says a lot that we started off the podcast with a quick chat about West Ham. We've done 5 minutes on it, and the fact that we've gone out of a major competition hasn't even come up. I don't think anyone's too upset about that. But we are going to move on to Millwall now, because there is, like I keep saying, there is so much to get through tonight. So we'll kick off now with the Millwall. Burnley came from 2-0 down in the first half and got a point. Dan, do you think point was a fair result? How do you think we did coming back from that 2-0 going down?
I thought they showed great character to come back into a game which Millwall made very difficult, to be honest. I mean, they're a very limited side, Millwall. In the first half an hour, I think Lawmass's mentality was that to get the ball over us, get it facing the opposite direction, because that way we obviously can't threaten. You know, with long balls over the top of our defence, percentage passes, and just getting our faces, and they made it very hard work, and it was a very mediocre opening half an hour. But once we got that goal back, we started pressing ourselves. Shackle led the line expertly, had them pressing high up the pitch, used the flanks, and Millwall couldn't cope with us. And I think one player that showed their kind of mentality of how they were playing was Danny Shittu, who certainly lived up to his surname, because I never saw him bring the ball down once. Every time it came to him, first time into the stands or high up in the air, it was ugly at times, but fantastic performance in the end. Great second half performance.
The goals were all quite scrappy, weren't they? I mean, Shittu's goal was a deflection, and Keitley's equaliser, I think that's gone down as an own goal, hasn't it? There wasn't that much quality on show. It was very much a blood and guts encounter. It was quite end to end, though, wasn't it? I mean, neither side could have won it, really.
It was, yeah. And I think it's another side to their Arsenal that the Burnley have shown. You know, they don't just play the nice, attractive football. They can get stuck in as well. They can get in opponents' faces. And in the build-up to the equaliser, you see David Egger going in with Sean Derry. And I think that challenge, which led to the goal, just epitomised the hunger and the spirit of the performance overall, really. It was a 50-50 challenge. Neither were backing out. And I think Derry walked off after. I think he was substituted straight after that challenge.
Derry, of course, is a very experienced campaigner, one of the enforcers, I think you call him, of the Championship. He's been around a long, long time, Sean Derry, for various clubs. I was actually surprised when I heard he was at Millwall. I'd missed that he signed for Millwall, but he's a very Millwall-type player, so it wasn't actually that much of a surprise to see him playing for Millwall. James, you were at Millwall for None and Ever on Saturday. What did you make of the Burnley performance?
I mean, to come back from 2-0, she shows great character. But we deserved to sort of get into that position, because to start off, we were very poor. I think it seemed to flick a switch when they scored the second. Obviously, it was off a sort of, it was a fluky goal with the second. But after that, we seemed to sort of wake up, and that last 10 minutes before the break, we were absolutely fantastic. And obviously, that culminated in Sam Vokes getting one back. And I think we carried on the same way after the break. And I think Scott Arfield in particular was very unlucky not to score. He had one amazing run where he rounded the keeper and just couldn't do anything with the final ball. And obviously he hit the post as well, when we probably could have had a penalty straight after.
I was just about to raise that, actually. Arfield did hit the post, and I was sure. I've only seen the heart. I've only seen the highlights of this game, actually, but I was sure that Volks got to the ball before the defender and was tripped, so I couldn't understand why it wasn't a penalty. Do you have any thoughts on that penalty incident, Kevin? You were there as well, weren't you?
I was, yeah. I don't really have any thoughts on the penalty. It was a long way away from me. And
the
I'm
far
not sure
end of the ground, the away end.
Yeah, but what James was saying about Arfield, well, Arfield almost scored a header as well at some point in the second half. So it was he could have had a couple of goals, really. But in terms of the game overall, I'm not sure we had a terrible start. I think it was a very scrappy start. I think obviously their second goal was very lucky. It was just hit Vokes, and if that hasn't got hit Vokes and gone in, then it's 1-0, which is not a disaster. And I think it was just like, I think it was a very scrappy start rather than a poor start from us. I think, but obviously the character to come back from 2-0 is fantastic. I'm really trying not to be disappointed, but I think we really deserve a win. We created enough chances to win the game. And it's strange being disappointed to come back from 2-0 down to draw. But I really thought we could have won that.
I think it just took... Sorry,
go on, Dan, go on.
I was just going to say, I just think it took us longer than usual to adjust to the conditions of the way Millwall had set up. Like I say, I think Lomas felt that if we didn't have the ball on the floor, we couldn't hurt them, which, you know, proved correct in the end, because the amount of hard... But we're constantly facing our own goals, just chasing balls while they were putting pressure on us. But once we got the ball down, we got the ball to Arfield's feet. You know, Arfield was outstanding on Saturday afternoon. And the move leading up to that, to the incident where Arfield hit the post, was absolutely sensational. Just one touch football, free flowing. Arfield takes it past Robinson and smashes the post. And then Vokes should have had the pen. Don't know why it weren't given.
I was joking.
They were quite a strange team to watch like that with Millwall. In that every time they got the ball at the back, it was just knocked out of the sideways for throwing or a hit of the pitch. There was a few occasions when there was no Burnley player within 10 yards of a Millwall defender, and it just hit it straight out for throwing. It was really strange tactics. It was just essentially get it out of play, like I said, just to stop us getting it on the ball on the floor.
Why do you think that it took us so long to adapt to the Millwall style play? Like, it's not going to be a surprise, is it? Millwall always play like that. They always have, regardless of who's in charge. It shouldn't be a surprise that they're going to be that sort of up and under team and playing long balls and getting in our faces. Do you think maybe not having Dean Marnie in there, maybe that was a bit of an influence in there? Do you think we missed him?
I think he was a massive miss, yeah. I think with Marnie straight away, you can sense the absence of the energy in the midfield. I think, you know, it would have made a difference. But, you know, to be fair, we got back into the game well. I mean, with Millwall now, you know, they've got the likes of Nicky Bailey and Waghorn and McDonald and Wolford, you know, all players who've got a bit of flair about them. And when I saw the team sheet, I thought, you know, they're going to try and play football here. But, you know, there weren't any evidence of it whatsoever throughout the 90 minutes.
Do you think that was maybe an indication of them trying to stop us from playing, maybe? Do you think perhaps they try and play a bit more football ordinarily, but they were a bit afraid of what we might do to them if they did that and opened up?
I think you're probably right there. I think they've probably done the same with QPR as well when they went there. I mean, teams who can play football, they're gonna make it hard for them. They're not gonna play into our hands, because obviously they've Lomas listened how well we've been playing at the minute. And you know, if that's the way they're going to get the points, then, you know, that's what they're going to do.
Kevin, I think you were about to jump in there, weren't you? I think I just interrupted.
It was me, actually.
Oh, go on.
I was going to make a point about how I thought Millwall were, to say they're a team who are supposed to traditionally be a side of hard men, they did a lot of play acting and a lot of time wasting. I can't remember the last time I've seen a side that it felt like they were time wasting from kickoff. But often it felt the case with them. They were on the floor every chance they got, rolling around. And it was just a bit of a short, really.
A bit like Brighton, maybe?
Yeah, there was the fantastic moment in the second half when one of our players went down. In fact, no, it was the first half when we were attacking towards one of our players went down. He was on the floor, kicking his legs. And within 2 seconds, as soon as we started moving forward, he was sprinting towards goal. And it was that was quite a funny moment.
I think that's always a sign, isn't it, that a team's been instructed to behave in that manner when that sort of thing happens. There was a flashpoint involving Sam Vokes, wasn't there, after the non-penalty incident. Dan, did you see what happened there?
Yeah, I think it's Robinson that's gone into the back of him, isn't it? And Vokes has obviously gone down, and I think as per a few of the players have got into their heads that he's dived quite easily. And I think it was Nicky Bailey that got involved, and it's resulted in Vokes and Bailey kind of squaring up and laying the foreheads onto each other. Yeah, I'd only pit Vokes in that one. I think he had a few foot on him.
He's a big lad, Sam Vokes, isn't he? I was just listening to the game, but at one point in the second half, it did get quite feisty. And I was a little bit surprised that both teams finished with 10 men. What do you think the referee managed to keep control of the game? How do you think the referee coped with that sort of encounter?
There were times when he let it slip, and it was important that he got a grip of it again. There was moments where McDonald was throwing himself about and throwing himself on the floor, and it just needed a word. And eventually, I can't remember if McDonald was booked or not in the end. I think he might have been. But he was quite a persistent offender in making his presence known. And I think, you know, by the end of it, Michael Duff had a bit enough of it, and he started giving it him back a bit. And yeah, there were just times where the referee had let things go away. He just felt he needed to pull it up and bring the game back down to earth a bit, so that we could play football again. But it's just going back to the whole Millwall mentality, really. They'll just do anything to stop the opposition playing. And, you know, I think Lomas will feel that they did it quite well.
He'll probably be delighted with a point, really, even though they went 2-0 up. Kevin, you've got a point on the referee as well before we move on.
Yeah, I think there was a few times in the second half when there was like a 10-minute spell where there was quite a lot of quite bad challenges and quite a lot of bookings as well. And I think that's always a sign of a referee who's not quite in control, because if once it's one or two of us, he should really stamp his authority. A yellow card should be a sign of, okay, you know, I mean business, no more of this. But it seemed to be a case of just everyone going in, and there was one or two of those spells in five, 10 minutes when there were quite a few bookings. And that's always a sign for me, the referee's not quite in control.
One of the things I noticed, and I think Adam's probably going to press a button as soon as I mention this, but the use of substitutions, again, is that one of the bugbears I've regularly had with Sean Dyche since he became Burnley manager. I was a little bit surprised that he didn't go for it a little bit more. I know we don't have a lot on the bench, James, but I would have been thinking about Junior Stanislas in the last few minutes, maybe, to see if we can create a winning goal. Are you a bit surprised Stanislas didn't come on?
I was expecting to see Stanislas, to be honest. I thought that Edgar might have come off as well after he picked up what looked like a bit of a knock in the build-up to our second, where he went in hard and he cut one on the knee. And it did look for a moment like he'd maybe not be able to continue. on substitutes as well, I think the first goal had a big influence on what changes we would have made. Because I think before that, David Edgar was really, really poor. I don't know if it's because he was trying to live up to sort of Dean Marnie's normal role, but I thought he was absolutely dire for the first half an hour at least, until he sort of seemed to get into his flow and he was trying to put challenges in and he was working hard. But it was an odd one, I think, taking Carty off. It did feel a bit like towards the end that we were just sort of playing time out for the point. We sort of lost any urgency. When we got throw-ins, we weren't rushing to take them. So I think that might be why he brought Stock on rather than Junior.
I thought the same. I mean, I point out, I wasn't at the game. I was just listening to it on the commentary. But it did seem a little bit like we were happy at 2-0, which is fine. I mean, a point at Millwall's a very good result, and we've got to remember we were 2-0 down. Kevin, you've got a point about the substitutes on Saturday.
Yeah, I think definitely in the last, towards the end of the game, we definitely settled for the point. We slowed everything down. We stopped taking risks. We started holding on to the ball a lot more. But I think that was the right decision. I think because Junior was actually warming up just before Stock came on. So I thought it was him going to come on, but I think Stott was definitely the right decision. I think the 5 minutes before Stott came on, we were starting to get overrun in the centre of midfield quite a bit. We were doing quite well on the flanks. We were going up wide, we were doing really well. But in the middle, we were losing it a bit. Every time we went through the middle, Millwall coming to us rather than us going to them. So I think Stott coming into the middle, going five in midfield, bringing Stock in, just gave us that bit more solidity in the middle, which allowed us to see out the game, because we was a threat of us losing it at the end.
Do you agree with that, Dan, or do you think maybe we could have pushed on and tried to win it a bit more at the end?
I think, like Kev was saying, towards the end, we were starting to look a little bit jaded again, and which is understandable with the amount of games all the players are playing. And I think to move to a more solid midfield made a lot of sense, because, you know, you've still got a great passer of the ball in Stock, and he can still find, you know, the feet of Vaux or Ings ahead of him. He can still find the feet of Trippier or you know, anyone who's out wide. But I think, you know, once we're getting overrun in the centre a little bit, they were throwing balls into the box again with Millwall, and I just think it was the right decision just to shore it up a little bit.
I suppose if we had put Stanislas on,
I think what we've been good at is catching.
Well, I was just about to say, if Junior had come on and maybe given the ball away and we conceded a winner, then we'd have been saying he shouldn't have brought him on. So the fact that we did get a point, I suppose we have to praise Sean Dash for managing to get that result. We are going to move on from Millwall now. There is a lot to get through today, and we are going to do the Player of the Month award. Nona and Evers teamed up with the Burnley Express. We've got Dan from the Express with us today for a new Player of the Month award this season. We've had a couple of different winners already. I think Danny Ings won in August, and Sam Vaux took the September prize. I think that's right. And we have a different winner again. But before we announce the winner live on the podcast, I want the choices from the four of you, actually. We'll come to Adam as well. We'll get Adam out of his producing duties. Who was your choice, Kevin? We'll start with you. Who do you think was Player of the Month for October?
I went for Trippier this month. He's always a consistent performer. He's always plays well, but I think this month he was particularly strong. He got a few really important assists. The first one against Reading for Danny Ings, and he set up Scott Arfield's winner at Ipswich, and he got a sort of goal himself against Doncaster. I think
it was
it wasn't his, but he kind of created three really important goals for this month, and obviously he's played his part in one of the best defences in the league, so I went for Trippier.
I made this point on the podcast last week, I think, but before, when we announced we were going to be doing the award, someone joked that it was going to be called the Kieran Trippier Player of the Month award, just because he is so consistent. But he hasn't won one yet, just because of the excellence of everyone else. And he hasn't won this month either. So he was up there, but not Kieran Trippier. James, who was your pick this month?
I went for Jason Shackle this month. I just think he's been sensational all month. I've seen most of the games, I think, in October. So all the Saturday games, at least. And particularly at Ipswich, where it was a very tight game, he was absolutely fantastic at the back, always making the important last gasp challenge. And I think, you know, since he got over the injuries he must have had in the first few months he's been here, he's been an absolutely outstanding centre-back. And his performances almost remind me of sort of Stephen Caldwell promotion season, how integral he was to everything.
Well, it says a lot that we are now talking about Shackle in that sort of bracket, the Stephen Caldwell of having that sort of influence. Adam, can I come quickly to you? I think you were a Shackle voter as well. What was the reason you went for Shackle for October?
He kind of just leads from the back. He's just a massive kind of help to our whole team. He's the captain, and you can tell he's the captain, which is more than Chris McCann did when he was the captain. He's so consistent at the back, and he's so good. That's why I voted for him.
Well, of course, it's four wins in the league, four wins out of four, and we only conceded one goal in the league, which was actually a Shackle own goal. So impressive that he's getting so much praise. Dan, what about you? Who was your choice for October's Player of the Month?
I'd agree with the two formerly said. You know, both Trippier and Shackle have been absolutely outstanding. But I think Tom Eaton deserves a mention as well. I think just his presence at the back is vociferous. He knows where he wants his defenders to be. Defenders know where they need to be. I think since he's come in, along with Shaquille Marshall in the back line, they've looked so solid and so organised. I think Heaton deserves a lot of praise as well.
Heaton's a funny one, actually, because the defence has been so good this season. I think Heaton, a lot of the time, he's not really had much to do, so he's not caught the eye as much, but he has made big saves at important times. I'm sure we will need Heaton at some point. We've had a couple of comments, actually, on the live chat. If you are listening, get your comments coming in, because we'll give you a shout-out. And if you're listening through Twitter, you can use the hashtag NNMPod to get your comments to us. We've had a couple of people saying that Shaquille was their choice. Andy mentioned Danny Ings. I think that's just a reflex from Andy to mention Danny Ings. But we are going to do the winners now, and I've got a breakdown of the votes, actually, that was calculated by our own Kevin Robinson ahead of the announcement that will be made in the paper tomorrow. We're going to announce it live on the podcast. Tom Heaton was in there. He got 10% of the vote. Sam Vokes, 10% of the vote as well. It was quite split. Not really a clear winner. There was a lot of votes for different players. Scott Arfield, 11% of the vote. Danny Ings, 13%. Really, really even. Second place was Kieran Trippier, who had 16% of the vote. And can we have a drum roll, Adam, for the winner?
I don't have one, but I can do one.
I thought you said you had one. Anyway, I'm sure you can guess with all the players I've just been through, but it is the player that we've just been talking about. Jason Shaquille is the October Player of the Month with 31% of the votes, almost a third of the total votes. And there were actually a couple of votes for Bertie B after his performance. Was it the QPR game when Bertie B got sent off?
Yeah.
I thought that was quite amusing. A waste of vote in a way, but it did raise a smile. So that's one award for Ings, one award for Volks, and one for Shaquille. claps all round for those winners. Just before we move on to the next topic on the list, while we're on the subjects of the player and those three players, James, we'll start with you. Do you think those three are the outstanding players so far this season, or do you think there's players like Trippier and Heaton have been consistent enough to be mentioned up there? Ings, Volks and Shaquille, the winners so far.
I think out of the group, you'd pick those as the guys who've been the standouts. Obviously, with Volks and Ings getting the lion's share of the goals, and Shaquille's performance at the back and as captain and the way he's led the squad. But I think Heaton's been certainly been good enough to be in contention. But for me, he's not really had enough to do to sort of be the winner. I mean, obviously it was said that the defence has been so good that a lot of the time he's not had a lot to do, and he has made some good saves, but I mean, you've sort of got to take it as he's got to sort of see a real volume of shots to be outweighing the performances of everyone else. And Kieran Trippier, he's always a consistent player, but I think at times we have seen him get run ragged a little bit on the defensive side, but he's always seemed to come back in the second half, and he's always come out on top at the end.
He struggled a little bit at first in the QPR game, didn't he, with Hoyle's pace, but he came into the game really well. He always seems to adapt to the challenge that he's facing. And on Heaton as well, with the same game, the QPR game, I think there was only one save he really made, a shot that was straight at him. We'd pretty much played anyone in goal and we'd won that game 2-0. We were so dominant. Kevin, we'll come to you on those three players. Do you agree that they're the leading stars for Burnley so far this season, Shaquille, Ings and Volks?
I say they're three of the leading stars.
Is there anyone else you think's up there?
Well, I was going to say, I think there were 12 players who got nominations.
That's James's mobile phone with his ringtone.
But yeah, there were 12 players who actually got votes this month, which is quite incredible since we can only start 11 a match. And I think that's really epitomises our success this season. We've not had one player, we've not had two players, we've not had three players who've been outstanding. We've got 11 players throughout the pitch, and we've got every single player on the bench has been outstanding as well. I think that's the real defining aspect of our season this far. We've not had three players who've been outstanding. Everybody's been outstanding.
I think you're absolutely right. I'm just looking again at the breakdown of the votes, and there's Shaquille, Trippier, Ings, Arfield, Volks and Heaton all got 10% or over, so it was really split, which just goes to show how well everyone's played. Dan, is there anyone else do you think's been up there? Do you think Shacklings and Volks have been the best players, or is there someone who's flying a bit under the radar? I keep thinking about David Jones, who I think's been really, really good this season.
I think David Jones has been tremendous so far this season. I think his vision and his ability to pick a pass and speed up the play in the final third has really helped us, and it's helped us get behind defences a lot this season, which is where a lot of the goals have come from. So yeah, I agree with that. The other three standout players, Shacklings and Vaux, but you know, you don't find success being reliant on three players, do you? I think it's, you know, the team as a whole has been just, you know, Dyche always talks about the framework, and you know, it's the organisation within the squad and the understanding. It's been absolutely phenomenal this season. I've never seen a Burnley team so well drilled, I don't think.
And one of the players who epitomises that sort of approach for me is Scott Arfield. Adam, I think you think Arfield deserves to be mentioned in that sort of company, do you?
Yeah, I mean, he provides such an energy down like the flank, and he contributes goals. He's actually one of the best wingers we've had in my opinion.
Not even really a winger, is he? It's
no, that, really. He's playing out midfielder, but he's playing on the wing and he's doing really well at it. James will be keen to point out that he did make that mistake in the Blackburn game, and so can he really be one of our best performers if he made that mistake? But I think he can.
It's a different month now. I said that nullified him from last month.
Okay.
Yeah, he couldn't qualify for September just because of that mistake.
We're already
calling it that mistake because it hurts too much to refer to what actually happened.
But we're talking about the season so far anyway, so surely...
I think the way he responded from that as well shows the kind of player he is, the kind of character that he is as well.
Yeah. He's scored in those two games, didn't he, Scott Arfield? So it's, and he's got four for the season, which is... Is he third top scorer after the two obvious guys up front? So he's been a source of goals that I think we're all a little bit surprised at. He didn't really come as a reputation as a goal scorer from midfield, but he's proved to be, and arguably one of the better pieces of business we've done.
I think obviously that means David Jones is up there as well as being...
Absolutely,
it's almost like a swap deal with Chris McCann. I think we've definitely come out on top there.
Well, the three lads that have played, Heaton, Jones and Arfield, didn't spend a penny on any of them, and they've all improved on what they've replaced. We've just had a comment on the chat from Gank saying it's a blessing in disguise that Wallace has been injured. That's maybe a little bit harsh on Ross Wallace, who I think did a pretty good job while he was in there, but Scott Arfield's been outstanding playing in there. Kightley has basically come in for Wallace.
I think Kightley was actually Wallace's replacement, and
yeah,
he's worked hard, but I don't think we've seen the best of Michael Carey yet.
No, he has worked extremely hard. The QPR game, he was still chasing down their defenders in injury time, and I was watching it after the game. I was like, just have a rest now. We're 2-0 up in injury time. The game's won. You don't need to be chasing people down. Adam, can we come back to you on the squad generally? I think you've got points, mate.
Yeah, we did a feature on the podcast a few weeks ago about the promotion season squad.
And, we did.
The promotion season squad won. I'm really interested to know whether we think that now our current squad is better than the promotion season squad.
We can do that now.
Shall
actually
we do that?
Putting everyone on the spot a little bit. I think there was only a couple of the current players made it in. I'm trying to. Can you remember who it was that
I really can't.
Adam went for? I'm just trying to think who maybe made it through. I mean, did Danny Ings get the nod? I don't think Shackle even got in. I can't remember who it was.
I really, really hope Tom Heaton did.
Yeah,
I'm not sure he did because we were comparing the performances in the promotion season, and Jensen was so outstanding that season. I think he got the nod.
Yeah, uncharacteristically.
I think the differences between the two is that the I think Coyle got the team playing with flair, didn't he? They weren't really that much organisation. It was the mentality. He told his players that you can go out and beat any team, and as soon as he went out on the pitch, there was that belief that they could go out and beat any team. With Dyche, I think he's got us playing a more attractive brand of football, but at the same time, you know, we've got that organisation as well. I mean, you know, it's hard to think back to a time when we were scoring so many goals yet conceding very little as well. So, you know, at both ends, he's sorted us out as well as in the midfield.
Yeah, you've got a good point about the mentality there. We had Clark Carlisle on the podcast fairly recently, and he was saying that it was really unprofessional, the Coyle regime, compared to a lot of the managers he worked with. He was telling us about how they were having sweets and fizzy pop on the Friday before the game. So it's a marvel, really, that we managed to achieve all that with Owen Coyle.
It'd be Iron Brew. It'd be feeding them all, wouldn't it?
Probably would be.
Coyle's favourite, I think.
Iron Brew, transfusions. Is that a word? That's the right word. That is the right word. So, yeah, we'll go through the panel, actually, on that point that Adam raised about the promotion squad. Which players, Kevin, would you have from the current lot into that? What would your mix of the team look like?
Well, got from the current lot, I think you'd have quite a lot. I think, obviously, Trippier would come in at right back. Heaton's a weird one because he's a better keeper than Jensen, but Jensen was, like you say, so outstanding that year. So that's quite a weird one. But then obviously the front two, I'd definitely put Ings and Vokes. So I'd put Vings ahead of Patterson and Thompson. Big fan of Thompson, but I was never a huge fan of Patterson. On the wings, I think Chris Eagles was a big player for us that year. Not Robbie Blair was a big player for us. I think they'd probably both get into our team at the moment. And in centre midfield, Chris McCann in his day was outstanding. But
again,
I think
he was good that season, weren't he? But that was probably the best we saw of him.
That's it. Yeah, I think he's never been the same since. And we've definitely, like James said earlier, we've definitely got the best of the swap deal with him and Jones now. And back in I think. Playing, just thinking of Caldwell and Shackle playing together is quite mouthwatering. I thought that'd be an outstanding defence. But I think a mix of the two. I think this season probably coming off on top. From the top of my head now, but that might be just preference to the current team.
Well, I've put you all on the spot a little bit. I think a point that Dan almost touched on was that it was more individuals, really, wasn't it, under Coyle? It was like players like Blake and Jensen and Chris Eagles came up with moments of brilliance that we haven't really seen as much this season because they're playing much more as a team. James, we'll come to you on this then. What would your team of the mixed two sides look like? Which players would you be having?
Obviously, it's hard to decide because the fundamental
it is hard to judge,
In formation we played, but I think if I was to pick a formation, I'd probably just to squeeze more people and go with the championship promotion side. I think I'd take Jensen out for Tom Heaton, just on actual ability rather than how well Jensen managed to fluke that season.
He fluked a 61 game season. Okay, fair enough. Carry on.
Well, how many other times did he play for Burnley? He was never that good.
It was the whole season that he was extremely good for. Carry on, you can have Heaton over. I'm not going to stop you from doing it.
You know, I'd probably have me over Jensen. But right back, I would replace Duff with Trippier, and I think that was one actually that when we did that before.
I think it was Trippier. I'm trying to think who else it was. Actually, right back, Trippier. No.
I'd probably take Carl out for Shackle. Just again from, I think, slightly better technical ability. And obviously Calvin, as I think, would unfortunately get dropped for Ben Mee because he was a bit of a strange one, really, wasn't he, Calvin? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, when we did this feature before, I was actually castigated for not including Stephen Jordan because we played a few different people at left back that season. I went for Calvin because he played in the running and at Wembley, but Jordan was the one that people seemed to agree was the better one. I think left back's just been a problem position for us, really.
I think Stephen Jordan was actually really hard done by in the Premier League season where it and signed someone else to replace him. I don't think he'd done anything wrong. And I thought he was a perfectly capable left back, even at the Premier League level. Obviously, we saw that when we played Man United in the first game of the season. He had the assist on the Blake goal. But moving on from defence, I'd probably take Elliot in the middle with Marnie and Alexander. just because obviously Elliott scored that goal when Wayne, his runs from the middle were explosive at times, and obviously when he had played out wide, he was very capable of providing assists. On the wings, I'd probably go for Michael Kightley and Robbie Blake.
I'm not surprised at Kightley.
Well, I know what what ability he's got, and I think that's better than the kind of, I think Patterson really played out wide a lot, didn't he? Because Eagles are quite often on the bench because of his inability to be consistent. But I think Kightley's consistently a hard worker. Even though we haven't really seen his final ball come off yet, he still gives 100% every game, and you can never say that even if he's not been his most creative, he's not had an impact. And then up front, I would pick probably, if you could give him the service that gets him scoring, Sam Box over Danny Ings, just because I think he's more of an aerial target than Ings is.
Yeah, well, it will be. You've got to start thinking now about what sort of players would work well in a side, and I think your 11 looks like it would also be a good team. You'd probably have a different sort of makeup of the side if you were doing it just on individuals. Dan, you finally then, you've had a little while to think about this while the others have been mulling their selections. Can you give us maybe a mixed first 11?
I'd draft Diego Penny and Remco van der Schaaf in there.
What about Bezal Berisha? Have you got room for him?
Yeah, Berisha's pushing. Yeah, he's pushing for a start. No, I agree with a lot of what's been said, really. I definitely have Tom Eaton in nets, Trippier right back, Ben Mee left back. It's a tough one between... I don't think you can have two captains at the back in Caldwell and Shackle, so...
There'd be a lot of pointing going on, wouldn't there?
Wouldn't there?
Shackle.
I think I'd probably, at a push, go for Shackle. I think he's just got a little bit more about him in terms of with the ball at his feet. I think Stephen Caldwell was an exceptional organiser of the team.
Shackle's quicker
as
well.
Shackle's got a bit more pace as well, yeah.
Caldwell was very slow. He was excellent positionally, but he was slow.
Yeah. I'd have Duff alongside him as well. And then, you know, there's so many flair players you can pick from. You know, there's... Who'd you go for? You got Blake, you've got, Elliot.
It is tough. There are a lot of good players to try and fit in.
You've got Eagles, Kightley. You know, Arfield's playing out of his skin at the minute. Any selection of them would work, but I don't think I'd get rid of Vaux or Ings up front. I'd have to play them too, I think. Unless you can include Jay Rodriguez for his brief appearance during that season.
You could have Rodriguez. When we did it before, we were talking about the impact that they made that season, so we didn't really talk that much about Rodriguez just because it was 2 years later, really, when he had his breakthrough season.
Yeah.
It would be a totally different side, I think, if you just judged on pure ability, and I think Rodriguez would definitely be up there. So what about your midfield? Who would you be having in central midfield?
I'd go with I think you'd have to go with Alexander just because of the shield that he provided that season and the goals he contributed from a deep midfield position. You know, I thought he were excellent that season. And then, you know, you'd have to have a driving force ahead in someone like Mane. And I think I'd probably go for Elliot. I'd probably go for Elliot as well.
It's difficult to leave Elliot out just because of that goal, really, isn't it? And we've had a team from Robbie, actually, on the live chat. We'll go through Robbie's team. He's gone for Heaton in goal, Trippier, Shackle, Caldwell, Mee across the back, Blake, Jones, McCann, Kightley, Ings and Volks. That sounds like a hell of a team, doesn't it? And I think mine would be fairly similar to James's, actually. I'd definitely have the promotion midfield of Alexander, McCann, and Elliot. I'd want Blake and Ings up front, I think, somehow. I'd probably fit Eagles in as well. I'd want Eagles in my side. and I'd go for Carlisle and Shackle, I think would be my back two, with obviously Trippier and me as the fullbacks. That was a good discussion, that spurred on.
So, by... last for you?
No, I don't think I'd be able to fit him in, unfortunately. He'd be my impact sub, would be Stanislas. But yeah, thanks for bringing that up, actually, Adam. That was really interesting because so much of it has changed in just the few weeks since we did it last time. But we were revisiting this topic later on in the season, actually. We had a couple of people asking about the quiz, actually, earlier. There's no quiz this week, partly because I was too busy to think of a question and also because there's so much to talk about. So no quiz, unfortunately. But Adam can play the quiz music for you, which is a consolation. That's the end of this week's quiz. Congratulations if you got the answers right. We're going to have to move on. And one of the things I wanted to talk about this week on the podcast was the search for a third striker, which is something Kevin wrote about on the site. And we heard about Connor Wickham, who was rumoured in the Sunderland press. I live in Sunderland, so I read the reports, to be on the verge of signing for us, only to end up going to Sheffield Wednesday. Dan, what can you tell us about the Wickham deal? Do you think that was ever a possibility? Were we interested in Connor Wickham?
I think, well, Sean Darche came out and slammed them reports straight away, didn't he? He refused he was ever interested in Wickham. I've never been a fan of him, to be honest. You know, I've seen him play for the under-21s, I've seen him play for Ipswich, I've seen him play for Sunderland. I know he's only young, he's only 20, so he's still got time to develop yet, but I've never seen anything that's made me think, yeah, he's going to be a good player. He doesn't score too many goals. I think he's only scored 20 in his career so far, and it's just one of them situations where you're competing with clubs who have room to take these players in. I mean, you look at Sheffield Wednesday, they had Gary Medin and Chris Maguire and that lanky lad up front, that Nayu or whatever it's called, but none of them were in form, none of them were playing, they weren't scoring goals. So you can say to Wickham, you know, come in, we'll start you, you'll be in our starting 11. And I think they've brought Matty Frighton as well from Hull, who's an excellent signing at this level as well. So
yeah, they both scored at the weekend, actually, both on debut and... both scored in Sheffield Wednesday's first win of the season, actually, so made an immediate impact.
Yeah, I think it's the same with Lingard as well. You know, I mean, Birmingham, Lovenkranz and Novak, they weren't performing, they weren't scoring. Nikola Zigic was injured. So, you know, you can say to Lingard, we're going to give you first team football, whereas with Vaux and Ings in such form, Darche can't turn around to these players and say and promise them a start. It's like with Brighton, you've got Mikael Smith and Alua both injured, so Ashley Barnes is the only fit striker. They've brought in Leroy Leiter. It's just being able to give these players what they want, because they need to come in with this understanding that they're not going to start games and they're going to have to fight for a place in that starting 11.
So what do you think the difference was with Michael Cartley? Do you think that was maybe because Wallace was already injured? And also, are there any names you've heard about as looking for players? Do you know that we're actually on the hunt for another forward at the moment?
With Cartley, I think there was limited competition, weren't there, on the flanks. You could see Tracy and Stanislas lowering in Darche's rankings of them. They were being used intermittently, whereas, you know, Cartley's come in, he's been promised first team football, he's been getting it. With strikers, I've not heard anything yet. I still believe that Craig Davis is well on the agenda. I can't believe no one's touched Becchio at Norwich. I think he's made one substitute appearance in a cup game against Bury. And I think, you know, you've got to look at Cardiff for possibilities. You know, you have Odin Wingy and Bellamy, who started against Swansea at the weekend. Fraser Campbell came on as a sub. But then you have Maynard, who was an unused substitute. You have the Danish lad Cornelius, who they signed for £7 million.
Who's not going looking as he Cornelius, really.
No. You got Rudy Gested, Joe Mason, you know, all those players that are going unused. So there is players out there to bring in. It's just a case of getting them in and convincing managers and convincing players that they will get an opportunity.
The difficulty is, of course, that a striker is going to have to sit on the bench initially. Kevin, you wrote about this on the site, and that was essentially your conclusion, wasn't it? Do you think, what arguments do you think Dyche can make to managers to get players to come in, knowing that it is going to be a place on the bench at least at first?
Very few. It's really hard. And I think that is the biggest issue. I don't think persuading players to come is the biggest issue. I think it's persuading managers to let them come. I think the only way we can get someone to come is just by a manager doing us a favour, essentially. Dyche needs to, you know, talk to the managers he's got good contacts with and say, you know, we need this player for a month, and just try to get them to do us a favour, essentially. One thing we've got on our side is how well we're doing. So if there's a player out of form in the Premier League who's maybe not doing that well, maybe for someone like Cardiff, one of those players who's not in the squad because he's not quite got confidence or something, they might want to come to us for a month. Play with some players, you know, there's a really good spirit in the squad, maybe come on and contribute to a couple of wins, maybe get that confidence up, get him playing well. But I think that's probably our only argument we've got going for us. And obviously, regular football is a lot bigger pull than that.
Yeah, I think I just dropped out of the call. I'm back now. Did you make the point about Malky Mackay being a personal friend of Sean Dyche? Surely there's a link there that can be exploited. And Dan just pointed out there's a lot of forwards at Cardiff that aren't playing. James, is there any players particularly take a look at? What sort of position do you think we should be looking to strengthen? Do you agree that up front's where we need another body?
Yeah, I mean, up front's the obvious spot at the moment. There's a bit of cover there in midfield. You know, with Stocky and Edgar both around, and obviously the prospect of Barty coming back in January, if we got to a situation where we thought we'd need that extra man in midfield. But obviously up front's the real issue. If there's a suspension or someone picks up a slight knock and you want to give them a rest, we haven't got anyone sort of there at the moment. And I think a name Dan mentioned in Becchio, I think I've said before that he'd be my pick personally if we could have anyone in on loan who's not really getting a look in the Premier League, because he's a proven goal scorer at this level.
Becchio as well, his physical presence, isn't he? I mean, the Wickham link was not by the manager, but I could understand we'd be interested just because so he could come on and maybe exploit space in the last 20 minutes. He's got a bit about him, he's quite physical. I think he'd be covered for Sam Volks.
Hooray, Jamie's gone into a nuclear bunker.
it's like he's on an escalator slowly going into a lead chamber.
On a train going into a tunnel. What were you speaking about? I was playing Candy Crush.
I think he was talking about Becchio and how he's, you know, how he'd be a good sort of person to bring on for a last 20 if we could get him in. And obviously, I think most people would agree with having a guy like that available.
Yeah, I think I'm surprised Leeds aren't touched him, to be honest. I thought, you know, they'd be the first to respond to his ineffectiveness at Norwich, but. I don't know.
They haven't
I'm
got the same
no
setup there now, have they, though? Because he was in under Grayson, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And obviously the old owners, too.
But, I thought he'd have got himself a move by now, but...
I think on that physical presence as well, it's something what I mentioned in my piece and a few people mentioned on Twitter, is that if we did have a disaster up front, there are people who could fill in for Danny Ings. You know, there's a sort of... Obviously, they couldn't do quite that role, but people like Keith Tracy could come in and play a similar role to Danny Ings. But so we've not really got anyone who can come in for Sam Volks. There's nobody with his presence, his physical strength, his strength up top. So I think that's the type of player we do need to be targeting.
Yeah, I think same kind of mould with Craig Davies as well from Bolton Wanderers. I think he'd fit in quite well. And you know, for a big lad, he's quite tidy with his feet as well, and he's got a decent shot on him. And score, you know, he scores his fair share of goals as well. So I think he'd be another one that are coming and complement the squad quite well as well.
I think Jamie may be back, but I'm not sure. Jamie, can you speak?
I'm back. Can you? I've returned. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Is there anyone there? We had a couple of suggestions on the chat, actually. I think that was an internet problem. Silvani by Blake, free agent, who's been injured. I'm sure he's sitting up. And Robbie says Will Keane's on loan from Manchester United. So there's a couple more options there. Just finally, though, before we do end the podcast this week, I wanted to talk about the 12-month, one-year anniversary of the new manager coming in. And I just wanted to get views on how everyone thinks he's doing and how he's done for the year so far. So we'll start with you, please, James. How do you assess Sean Dyche's first year in charge?
I think he's been fantastic. I was one of the few people who sort of was defending him at the end of last season when a lot of people were saying he was, you know, negative. He'd been the cheap option. I think it was clear when he came to the side that we needed to do something about how many goals we were conceding. You can't do well in this league conceding 2.2 goals a game. That was his first task. He dealt with that well. I mean, there was a lot of good performance in there. There was a middling run towards the end of the season, but I think that was to be expected when he hadn't quite balanced the team the way he wanted. He's then had a full summer to work with the squad, getting people who fit what he wants to create. And I mean, he always says that his aim this season, he didn't set out at sort of we should finish in this position. He said he wants the team to come out every game and be competitive. And I think, you know, we've more than done that.
We've had a comment on the chat actually from Roger. He says, "What will Nonne ever do if they lose Jamie up top? Have we got anyone with the same physical presence?" I'm not sure we do. Maybe Andy would have to fill in. I think Andy could fill my boots. Kevin, what do you make of Sean so far?
I think I was looking through, because I knew we were going to be talking about Sean, I was looking through some of my posts on Nonne and everything from the end of last season. And although I thought I was a defender of his, I definitely defended that we didn't play long ball, which I think a lot of people thought we did. It was quite negative football, but it wasn't particularly long ball. But I was quite heavily criticizing him at times as well. Not just him, but the squad. I think one thing I did ask, I asked which players we'd be genuinely gutted to leave. And effectively, the answer was Austin. The rest of the squad, there was nobody who I thought was really, really disappointed to leave. And I think if you ask the same question now, it would be most of the squad. But I think there's very few players we would be not too fussed about leaving. Every single one of them. The players we'd be really disappointed to leave, and I think that's one of his biggest things. I think he's got players who were quite underperforming. He's got them to almost world beaters. I think Keith Tracy is a good example of that. I think he was a complete utter disaster until Dash came in, but he's got Tracy really believing in himself, and he's actually looking ambitious as Tracy, which is something he's never really looked before. Keith, he's looked like he's just been going through the motions, but now he looks hungry. I think that's a real plus point of Dyche's 12 months.
I want to avoid making a joke about Keith Tracy being hungry, but maybe he was a little bit too hungry for the West Ham game, making that challenge in the penalty area, which was shocking, really, that challenge. Dan, you have more contact with Sean than any of us, really. What can you tell him about him as a person, really, and what do you make of his year in charge?
I think he's had, well, I think it's been a phenomenal turnaround. When he came in, I think it was a case of just get the season over and done with, and then I can work with what I want to do. You inherit a squad, you don't necessarily want certain players within that squad, but you have to, you're forced to work with it. And at first we were very one-dimensional, and I think it would just hit Austin, and I think people started thinking, is this all what we're going to expect? But he's had the summer. I think, when you look at it and you lose the likes of Patterson and Grant and McCann and obviously Austin, you think, what's going to happen here? And, he's brought in Heaton, he's brought in Arfield, Noble, Jones, and it's just completely transformed the team. And I think just in that, in them few transfers that he's worked on without a budget, just shows what kind of, how astute he is and how we can find unearth a player that's got quality but not been given the opportunity at other clubs. And obviously now we've got that brand of football where we're competing every game. We're beating teams that really we shouldn't be beating, QPR with their millions. Beating Ipswich away from home was a phenomenal result. And yeah, it's, everything's come together now, and you know, I think he's done exceptional, to be honest.
Do you think the small squad maybe is? Do you think he prefers working with a small squad? Do you think that suits him?
I think some managers prefer working with a small squad, don't they? I think you just get that familiarity and consistency in performances, in the attitude of the squad. I think, you know, it showed with Coyle when we had a small squad there. I think it just breeds that familiarity and a want to win for each other. I think you get too much competition, you get too much animosity sometimes among clubs with big squads.
We've had a couple of questions actually on the chat just before we do wrap up. It's been a very busy show today. We've got through a lot, but there's other things that wanted to do. We could have carried on for another hour probably. Jack's been asking if there's any possibility of getting Sean on the podcast. We are working on that. Hopefully we'll be able to get something done, but I can't make any promises, I'm afraid. We will keep asking the question because we'd love to get him on. And Lauren was asking, how long have we been top? That is since October the 1st when we won at Doncaster, so over a month now. And if we win again on Saturday, we will stay top. That's it for this week's podcast, I'm afraid. We've got through it a lot. No quiz. I know a couple of you are upset at no quiz, but we will try and get one next week.
Just mention quickly as well, sorry. It's obviously going to be back-to-back awards for Darch by the looks of it as well, isn't it? So.
Yep, that was one of the things I wanted to mention. He's surely chewing for the October award after he won the September one. Four straight league wins. I don't think cup results count, do they? So he should be an absolute certainty for that. And I'd be surprised if there was no Burnley player on the shortlist as well. I think Shackle obviously won our award that we do in conjunction with the Burnley Express. And I think Shackle, maybe he was on the shortlist last time, wasn't he? So maybe he'll get the nod again. I'll be interested. I think they come out this week. And one other thing that I did want to raise was Danny Ings and the England under-21s. That'll be another squad announced this week, and I'll be expecting Ings to be in that squad again. But unfortunately, we don't have time for anything else today, so we will have to leave everything else for next week. We'll be back on Saturday for No Name Ever Live for the Bournemouth game, and the podcast will be back Monday night. If you have been listening and you do fancy coming on the podcast, we would love to get you on. Give us a shout on Twitter, give us an email. You can email us blog@nonaneever.net or tweet us @nonaneever.net. If you've got any feedback about the podcast as well, get in touch. All the feedback you give us makes it really useful and worthwhile for us. But we are going to wrap up now. Like I say, we'll be back on Saturday for the Bournemouth game and Monday night for the podcast. My guests this week have been Kevin Robinson, James Bird, Dan Black from the Burnley Express. Thanks a lot for everyone for listening, and we'll be back next week. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the No Name Never podcast. For more, visit nonameever.net. And don't forget, follow us on Twitter @nonameevernet.